Blog Talk Radio.
It's Smoke Signals, brought to you by IndiansBaseballInsider.com and hosted by Tony LaStoria and Jeff Ellis. They're talking Tribe. Good evening, Tribe fans. Welcome to another edition of Smoke Signals. I'm your host, Tony LaStoria, along with my co-host, Jeff Ellis. I'm going to talk some more Indians baseball. Once again, the season of non-dreams continues unfortunate way today as the Indians blew a 3-1 lead and in the ninth inning gave three runs. It wasn't very pretty. Jeff, I know you and I were talking off the air a little bit coming on. Fortunately for us, we didn't have to watch it ourselves, but a couple wild pitches and a couple base runners here and there, and before you know it, three runs scored, and the Indians were the victims of a walk-off win. Something they have not. I did not check this. I think we talked about it last week, but something that they did, they have not yet, I think, achieved yet this year. They have not had a walk-off win at home, I don't think. It's really been a really weird year, and I think for a lot of people at this point, even though we have 8 weeks or so left in the season, we're all kind of just counting down the days for this baby to be put to bed and get to the off season to kind of reassess, reevaluate, and retool and get this team back on track to contend next year. And I think that's going to be kind of the basis of our show tonight, where we need to look at, can this team be a contender next year? Do they have the pieces in place right now where with some minor retooling or do they have to do an overhaul in the offseason? What do they have to do to become a contender? I mean, if you look around baseball, you got teams all over the place that are surprise contenders, the Twins, the Astros, I think to some degree the Mets. There's teams all around baseball where they didn't do any heavy lifting in the offseason, but it's just the way the game works. Sometimes things just go your way a little bit, and you get a couple breaks and a little bit of luck on your side, and, it is what it is. I mean, look, the Indians, I think, are, 49 and 58. If they were 58 and 49, they'd be in the thick of things. That's only a 9-game difference. That's very minor when you're talking about 100 games. I mean, that's 9 games where if they would have won rather than lost over the course of 100 games, that's very minor. So, there isn't a lot that they have to do, but I think we both agree, Jeff, that this team has some work ahead of it. Now, last week at the trade deadline, we talked a little bit about, what they did and kind of what they have to do going forward. Do you kind of have any final thoughts on how everything went? Because really, they didn't do anything else after our show last week except for a deal off Dubchinsky, I think it was, on Friday. I mean, are you satisfied with what they did at the deadline, or were you a little bit disappointed that they weren't able to maybe move somebody else, or they weren't able to maybe take advantage of something and acquire somebody?
In the end, I'm fine. Everyone's getting caught up, and as fans will, with just their team. But if you look at it, no one has spent more in Seattle the last 2 years. And, once a week I get someone who's complaining about the Indians failing to sign Nelson Cruz. And, Seattle added him to a team with a good rotation after just signing Cano. And I believe they're in last in their division, or maybe Oakland's in last. And they were many people's World Series pick. The Marlins went and added all that talent, and then they ended up the Marlins gave up a first rounder and prospects to get rid of all that salary after it. So, they added Kaminsky, who's going to be a top 10 prospect at the end of the year. Of that, I'm sure he's a top 100 guy. He's probably going to be top 5 in the system. you know, the unbelievable deal. And then they got two kind of filler depth guys. And, you know, that's kind of where I am. Especially after the way Carrasco's pitched, more and more it becomes hard for me to even think about trading him when he might have the best contract, you know, of anybody on the Indians. You know, they're set up for in a good position. They've got their big four, and, you know, for as much as everyone wants that right-handed bat, it is interesting that this year they're, like, 10th in WRC plus against left-handers and 28th against right-handers and of all teams. It's actually the reverse this year. All of a sudden, for whatever reason, this year the Indians are getting destroyed by right-handed pitchers and one of the 10 best teams offensively against left-handers. So it's just a weird year. You talk about the no walk-off wins, the really low BABIP, which shows they've been really unlucky, the just team freeze with runners in scoring position. It's been, you know, if you believed in the supernatural, you would say they've been cursed.
Yeah, I think that for sure it has been, like I said earlier, I think it's an odd year. I mean, you know, kind of what's gone wrong has gone wrong, and they haven't really gotten any breaks with anything. I mean, any guy they've added to the roster, be it a guy that they called up or maybe got a minor deal or picked up all, you know, waivers, that kind of stuff. Sometimes you get lucky and you get a spark and that kind of thing, but they haven't had anything like that come up to really kind of provide a spark. Yeah, you know, Lindor's done a solid job, but, you know, nobody has come up and gone gangbusters, kind of like or played very, very well. Kind of like Kipnis did in 2011. He had a really strong first 2 or 3 months. It wasn't out of this world, but it was very strong. You know, I think when Ryan Garko came up that one year, he had a really strong second half. You know, Kareem Garcia. I still remember. I think it was 2003. I think or 2002. He had like that big 2 months where he had like 50 RBIs or something like that over the course of 2 months and like 10 or 15 homers. You know, they haven't had that kind of luck where some guy comes out of nowhere and just produces, and that's what they really kind of needed, especially with some of these guys being out of the lineup. You know, now Kipnis is out of the lineup, and I'm just stunned at how much of a struggle it has been to score runs for this team. And it really kind of points to the fact that this team's got some work to do with this lineup in the offseason. I think we all will agree that the starting rotation is something that they don't really have to worry about in the offseason.
Three are off the charts. No, it's the 1 through 3. There's no team that can compete with the Indians right now. They're the only team in baseball that have 3 of the top 20 guys in XFIP. Bauer's a little further down, but still an exciting arm. And then that 5th spot, you got the Houses, the Andersons, the Plutkos, the Roberts. They just have a list of guys who could go in and out. So that's one of those positions where their strength. I'm not as worried about the pen as others. I mean, I know Allen fell apart today, but on the whole, it's been a solid year. On the whole, for Shaw, it's been a solid year. And the nice thing about those two guys is it's consistency. All the questions become with the bat. I hope this isn't a case where I'm talking over you, Tony. I apologize if I am. You know, offensively, you know, outside of Brantley, the outfield is just kind of completely up in the air. Bourne's played better late, but I don't think we can count on it. They've been trying some of the older guys, and, you know, you had Sands go 0-for-3 today with 3 Ks from your 3-hole. I guess home run, but I don't think he's nailed anything down. And that's pretty much first base, second base, catcher, and shortstop are what we know. And from there, left field. So you got center field, right field, third base. That will be the questions. And then we'll have to see what they do with the big contract guys. But it's surprisingly less holes than I think most people would think. Those 3 clearly open spots, maybe 4. you know, there is also the question that they're probably going to have Bourne and Swear at least pitch a good chunk of those. Hopefully not too many, as they do not want those options to bust. And doing the basic thought process, reach out to Tony and see what's going on. The technical difficulties currently happening right now. So if you guys can, I apologize again, just hold on for one moment. You know, an interesting talent. I don't know if the power will ever be there, but you know, they've got players. We would have liked to have seen James Ramsey play a little stronger this year. We would have liked to see Taylor Naquin stay healthy. If either of those had happened, they'd already be in the majors. But, you know, especially now with Murphy gone, it opens up for one of those two guys to be the platoon with either Sands or Rayburn, I assume, in the other outfield
spot. I'm back,
Jeff. Okay. No problem. I kind of went through pitching and all the stuff. I don't know if you've heard or not, so you can jump in. You were talking about the rotation being set before you got cut off.
Yeah, I was using Skype, and Skype kind of kicked me off, so I'm on a landline now. But, yeah, as I was kind of saying, I think with the fact that they have those starters, it gives them a perfect building block to go forward. I mean, and we said this before, I think last week or previous show, that's the, you know, if you're going to be strong on one area, that's a great starting point. And, you know, there's bits and pieces in the bullpen and the lineup. Now they got to figure out a way to kind of round it all into shape. And I was saying as I was kind of rambling, I didn't know that I was kicked off, that I would even consider if they can't go out and get a bat, if it's unattainable because of the cost in a trade is exorbitant, or obviously they can't go out and sign that guy. Maybe they look to just go out and get the best bullpen they can possibly get. Make this a 6-7-inning game. And then not just are you going from Carrasco and Kluber and Salazar and Bauer, now they're handing it off to, you know, I'm using the Royals as an example. I mean, obviously, they're the extreme case because this is a rare situation where this happens with such a just dominant bullpen that they've had and for 2 years in a row. But that's, you know, a dream there. All of a sudden now, it's not so important that you score 4 or 5 runs a game. You know, 3 runs a game is going to be more than enough in most cases. And so, I mean, you know, I guess we'll see what they do. I think there's a lot of things that we can get into here tonight as far as, you know, certain aspects of the team. But, I mean, if you were GM for the day, Jeff, I mean, like, what are you going to do? I mean, are you looking to, no doubt, you got to do what you can to fix this lineup? Are you trading away some pieces? Are you just looking to add a piece? Are you looking to fix the bullpen? Or, I mean, like, what are you going to do if you're the GM for the day and you have carte blanche?
I mean, I'm not super concerned with the bullpen. I mean, I know Allen had you know, the blow up today, and he's had a few moments, but on the whole, he's had a pretty steady year. You know, Shaw's got an ERA under 2, and McAllister, we'll see if he can do it again next year, but at least between Shaw and Allen, that's the makings of two consistent bullpen arms, two guys who isn't it, you know, relative to the volatility of it. Unless you can get someone really special, I'm pretty happy with where they are. Hopefully Armstrong can work on his control a little bit, and I think he could be a natural addition. You know, for me, I would just be trying to – I think with Carrasco's contract, when you are the Indians and who they are, I don't think he's the movable guy. I think – and I don't – Bauer isn't as valuable as the top three. He's statistically, it's a top three and then Bauer. I know there are some concerns this year with Danny Salazar in Super 2, and I like Salazar a lot, but he's also the – I mean, Carrasco had Tommy John as well, but in my mind, Salazar was the guy that they're very nervous about. I'm not sure if it was multiple injuries or what, but you know, maybe he's the guy you shot. Maybe you talk to the Marlins and see it about Ozuna, or you know, you just kind of maybe talk to the Cubs and see about Solar plus pieces. It's, you know, it's tricky in the right-handers as a team they've struggled with. So, you know, I don't know if there's an easy or quick fix. You know, they have you know, when you were cut off, I was just saying it's like when you look at the team, they're pretty much set. I think the Indians feel they're set everywhere, but third base, center field, and then I was right field. Now everything else is kind of there, and I still wonder how different this season would be if Roger Davis doesn't slide in and take out Gomes' ankle. I mean, he won the Silver Slugger last year. He was a top five catcher, and he struggled mightily. And, you know, if you've played baseball, if your base is off, it can just completely kill you. And I feel like Gomes' base is not fully returned to him as a hitter this year. I mean, him being healthy might be the big bat in a way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that him missing a portion of the season and also really not being very effective since he's returned has had a dramatic impact on this lineup because he's the only everyday right-handed bat, really, in this lineup. So he's very important in a lot of ways to create that balance. Now, I hope they don't think they're set with this lineup. Yes, I get it. You know, Francisco Lindor is the shortstop of the future. Jason Kipnis is under contract, an all-star. Carlos Santana is under contract, I think, another 2-3 years. Jan Gomes is here, you know. Michael Brantley in left. You got Bourne under contract next year. You know, obviously we know third base and right field are the two positions that they're not, you know, 100% sold on anybody there. And our potential position they can upgrade where they can go internal. Or they can look externally for an option. So I get that. But having said that, if the opportunity exists, I mean, look, they're not trading Michael Brantley. And they're not trading Francisco Lindor. And probably not Jan Gomes. Those three guys aren't going anywhere. And I guess you could almost put Kipnis in there. But I seriously wouldn't. I would not bat an eye if the right deal came along and he was sent away. You know, maybe they send them out a top dollar and get something in return. But that kind of hurts them because they're looking to add bats. And considering the year he's had, you know. But then again, you don't know what's going to happen next year. I mean, look at Kipnis in 2013, and then look at him in 2014, and now look at him this year. Look at Jan Gomes last year. Look at Jan Gomes this year. I mean, look at Michael Brantley last year, Michael Brantley this year. I mean, there's no reliability up and down this line. There's nobody you can sit there and say, this is what we're going to get out of this guy every year. I mean, think you know. You know, Carlos Santana might be, for as crazy as it maybe sounds, he's probably the most reliable guy of the bunch.
Until this year. I mean, this year he's down a little, but, I mean, he was consistently about a, you know, he wasn't a top 20 bat, but he was about, you know, you'd say a top 30 to 40 bat in all of baseball.
Yeah, you know, Carlos Santana, he's going to hit in the low 200s to 250. He's going to be up about 350 to, you know, somewhere in the on base. And he's going to, you know, the power, I think, has probably been the one thing that's been missing the most, I think, this year. I think he's got like a 160 ISO, which isn't that bad. And, you know, his OPS plus is over 100. I mean, but I think what's really hurt him this year, I mean, the batting average is a little bit lower than it normally is. And those power numbers and those production numbers aren't there. But the guy's got a 68-79 walk to strikeout ratio. And, he's doing his thing. So there are worse problems than him on this team. You know, he's going to get around 100 walks again this year.
Player.
Yeah, and he's just miscast. He's not a cleanup hitter, but he's been hitting cleanup because the Indians have no other options. But, you know, people want to, you know, just because the guy's a cleanup hitter doesn't mean he should be Manny Ramirez. You know, I think that's what, you know, people are expecting. And you got to have your expectations have to be in line. He's not. He's more of a six hitter, a borderline five hitter on a team. You know, on a really good team, he's probably a seven hitter. A guy with some good power. You know, get on base kind of guy. And, if he was hitting sixth or seventh in your lineup regularly, you would have no problem with those numbers. They just kind of magnify themselves when you're hitting second or fourth or even fifth. But, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing with this lineup. I mean, you can't rely on anybody, you know, from year to year of who's going to do what. So that also makes it difficult for the Indians when they want to make their plans for next year. Like, hey, all right, here's how we feel here. You know we're going to get this out of this guy. I know that they're big into the Saber metrics and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not a big Saber guy. I get it, and I apply it, and a lot of it does make sense. You know, I think some of it is taken a little bit too way out of control. It's a little bit absurd in some degrees, but I do know that they use it a lot. But for me, I would almost think it would be difficult to use those numbers when they're so up and down every year. How do you really know how to project and forecast your lineup when you don't know what you're going to get? I mean, look at Ryan Raber in 2013. Look at him last year. Been a better player this year. I mean, there's so many guys. If you go over the last 3 years, 2013, 14, and 15 on his team, that they have not had any consistency. It's been up, down every year, depending on who the player is, you know? And the one guy, like we said, was Santana, who's been the only guy that's had any legitimate consistency, and that's a problem, and something they've got to find a way to fix. That will that require that they make some moves, go out and maybe move a couple of these major pieces on this team. I mean, a couple of these guys are almost, obviously we know Bourne and Swisher are virtually impossible to trade, which Swisher was supposed to be one of those guys they can rely on. He was supposed to be that guy that you can pencil in 20 homers. I'm not a big RBI guy, but, a guy that's going to hit, 80 to 90 RBI, hit around, just around or below an 800 OPS, all those things. He's been a far cry from that. Michael Bourne, you can pencil him in for 40 or so stolen bases, been a far cry from that. So, boy, it's going to be very interesting when they have their organizational meetings in early October. What they ultimately decided to do. I know three years ago when they picked up Francona, that the big thing then was they had to get some frontline pitching. And I think that for the most part, it's worked out well for them. Now, they got kind of lucky. Kluber came out of nowhere in some regards, and Carrasco came back, final straw kind of guy, where they held on to him to the very last moment, and he evolved and finally put it all together. Salazar was already in the system, but the big guy that they added was Bauer in that off season. So I think for the most part that they found a way to improve the pitching and also the depth. Now they got to figure out that lineup. I mean, what can they do as far as the lineup goes?
You're talking about the pitching. I think it's kind of funny. As you were talking about it, made me realize. Kluber was a guy who kind of bounced around. You'd almost say a scrap heap type. Carrasco, people the last previous 2 years were calling for him to be cut. Another guy kind of off the scrap heap. Bauer was, had all the talk about being uncoachable. And his first season in the organization was not impressive. And Salazar was one of those guys. I don't think when he was put on the 40-man, I don't think he had even reached a double A yet. So they might have the most unconventional top four pitchers in baseball. It's not a single one of those guys is someone you go, oh, they took the route you'd expect to get there, which almost makes you feel better about the Indians' current developmental system. But, when you talk about how did they get there, it's this offseason. Thanks to all the trades, teams are going to go crazy trying to buy Price and Cueto and Kazmir, since none of them can be offered qualifying offers. And the Indians, I think, are just going to try to use the same approach as before. They'll sit back and see who does not, because Philadelphia wants to spend. Boston wants to buy arms. Chicago wants to buy arms. There's other names out there as well. And if someone like Boston completely misses out, they could be a natural trade partner as they have high-end talent that could be close to helping, or even maybe a few proven guys. It's going to be interesting. It's just going to be, once again, they're going to sit there, I think, this offseason and just know that 1 through 4, no one can stand with them rotation-wise, and then they'll see who's desperate and you know, it's going to be like musical chairs. Whoever's left standing at the end, the Indians will, and there's going to be more than one team, and they'll play those two guys off each other, and I think they will probably trade one of these arms this offseason, but pretty much wait and then hold all the cards in their hands. Hey, Tony, did I lose you? Well, I think we lost Tony for a second. I got a bit long-winded there. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, just to kind of continue to nail that point home I was making while we wait for Tony to rejoin us. Every team always wants pitching. It is the most valuable asset because it is the hardest thing to develop. The Indians have last year's Cy Young Award winner, and Carlos Carrasco, who, if you follow me on Twitter, I pointed out today, is fifth in all of baseball and ex-fifth. So, you know, he's pitching like an ace this year. They have two guys who you would say are true number ones at the start. Salazar is getting very close to that if he's not there already. They've got three guys who are would be number ones on a lot of teams. And Bauer's a solid mid-rotation guy, you know. Carrasco was third in XFIP, Kluber 9, and Salazar 16th, and Bauer 66. And then they do have guys coming up who aren't as dominant, but are solid arms. You know, they're not, the Indians are not going to be able to compete financially. So while it stinks to think about losing someone like Salazar, it is a possibility that they could flip him. I think he's the most likely flippable player because of overall value and how long he's locked up for. You know, he's going to start getting expensive as arbitration happens. You see, they'll do the exact same thing they did at the deadline, and maybe they'll get lucky like they did with the Moss situation where a team drastically overpays for need. And maybe a team will drastically overpay for someone like Salazar because of a pitching need and because he's locked up for a few years. When you look at someone like Salazar, he should fetch a bigger package than anyone did at this year's deadline. And I really believe that because of what we've seen statistically and because, you know, look what David Price got for 8 starts. Look what Mike Leake got for 8 starts. It's going to be, if you get a Salazar, you're getting him for 4 years maybe. So Tony is going to call back in. While he is out, I think I would just point out, I just saw the tweet as I was talking about Andy Diaz earlier when he was out. He's had his third home run in six games. So, you know, he's got the build to have power. So if his power emerges, he's really, for the kind of the lesser known guys, beat out to Akron. Definitely take some time and look at Diaz. He's one of those guys I'm spending a lot of time, I know, statistically checking every day. And, another one while I wait for Tony is Dorsis Paulino, who used to be a big-name prospect, really fell off the map, but has been hitting up well all of a sudden once he got a promotion to high A. So not really – I mean, he's still young enough to be a prospect. He's not going to be a top-10 guy, but it's just nice to see a guy who was a top-10 guy starting to do something in the lower levels. Other guys, let's just talk about some minor league stats. Bobby Bradley is up to 19 home runs. You know, there's some issues with on-base percentage, general strikeouts and everything else, but exciting to see him leading his league in home runs. And he's the power output, you know. I haven't seen that in the lower level since the days of Russ Branyan and Scott Morgan. Hopefully he's closer to the Branyan side of that comparison, but it's definitely nice to see. You know, that draft we've got Bradley with 19 home runs in low A. Zimmer's already in double A, looking like he could conceivably help this team a year later. Sheffield's getting his BABIP is high, but his K to walk is excellent, which is a big time indicator. and it won't let Tony call back in. Hiram is on. So we'll see. I apologize for technical difficulties. We are working our way through it. Things happen. But yeah, just, you know, for all the negativity.
Jeff, I'm back.
Oh, there we go. I was talking about random minor leaguers that had intrigued me. I got a bit off, but I was like, I had to fill the air. But go ahead.
I think I also pumped in Hiram. I think Hiram's on your line. I could see it, but I couldn't talk. My connection dropped. But is that you, Hiram?
Hello.
Hey, Hiram.
Is that you?
Yep, that's me.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I had made you live. I couldn't talk. My phone got disconnected. But anyway, Hiram, glad to talk to you. How are things going tonight?
Good. How about you guys?
All right.
The baseball aspect, not so good. But everything else is fine.
Yeah.
No.
We're surviving.
I'm not discouraged about what I'm seeing. I see just a couple of holes that they need to fill for next year. One is to get a legit cleanup hitter. It's probably the hardest thing to get in baseball right now. So
it's going to cost them a pretty penny to get one. They're going to have to almost take a step back to take two steps forward to get one.
I don't think it'll cost the guy. I don't know if this guy is a cleanup hitter. I don't even know if you guys mentioned him. I almost overslept through the show. But Marcel Ozuna is the guy I think they're going to go after.
And I don't
think
it'll cost.
No,
I mean, is that your solution for cleanup? I mean, you're going to have probably the same problem with that guy as you've had with Santana and other guys. I mean, if they're going to look for a cleanup option, I think they need to find somebody that's, you know, a lot more consistent and proven. I still don't know if I want to go. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, and I was telling Jeff earlier, you know, maybe they have to run. Maybe they do get to the point where, like, hey, we can't get that cleanup hitter. It's just not out there. That maybe we just have to go and make the best pitching staff we can possibly make, and then piecemeal this lineup as best as we can.
What about the other Carlos Gonzalez? Like, I was very poo-poo on him before the year, and I don't have his splits in front of me, but I was just looking at the top 20 guys in terms of slugging percentage. And he, like him and Chris Davis, probably not even Davis, but he's really the only guy I could see being available in the top 20 slugging percentage bats.
Well, the name that
maybe
that
Jay
is
Bruce and as well, I would say those are your best two opportunities.
Well, the guy who was available and who has been available since May that nobody talks about is Brian Braun. Ryan Braun is available. I know he makes a ton of money, and they will eat some money, but he is available. He's 31. I don't know if I like that, but he's available. There's a couple other guys that are available. I even looked at guys who are in the minors. Renfroe from San Diego, Christian Walker from the Orioles might be available too. They need some right-handed power. I mean, whether it's a cleanup hitter or what, they need some right-handed power. And if they don't, then they're in a tough predicament because I know they don't really want to touch their farm system, and they really don't want to touch their starting rotation. So they're in a predicament where I don't know what they're gonna do.
No, Brian would be an interesting one, but that's
really expensive.
All prospects. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking up the contract now, but he, that starts with a Bradley Zimmer.
I don't think so.
I have no problem with trading anybody for that, but I think it's going to be a lot more than Bradley Zimmer. That's the thing.
Yeah, it starts with him.
You're going to be parting with a frontline pitcher, and they don't have a frontline pitcher other than one of the four guys they have.
Yeah, Milwaukee's in a complete rebuild. Braun is owed $20 million next year and 17 yeah. and 18 and then 19 and 17. He's owed about $100 million through the age of 36.
All right, but I got an idea for you guys. I got an idea.
Okay.
I don't see how the Tigers are going to contend by next year. I don't think it's realistic. They have no farm system. They're tapped out as far as money is concerned. Yeah, they got some money coming off the books, but I don't think they're going to give it. How about sit down and talk to me about JD?
They've got a late 80s, early 90s owner. He's I don't want anyone to get mad and say I want him to die. I'm not saying that, but until Mike Ilitch dies, they're never going to be allowed to rebuild.
That's true. That's what cost Dave Dombrowski his job.
Yeah. Ilitch is 86, and I think as long as he's in charge.
That is going to be really interesting to see what happens. I didn't see, have they found a successor yet? That can be an off-season thing.
Avila. I think they're sticking with Avila. I think they're going to stick with him. Because he listens more
really?
I think this is also Ilitch, or why can I not say his name correctly? Ilitch is getting his hands more involved. I think, he brought in Avila as someone it's respected, but someone who's going to listen to him as Dombrowski wasn't. I mean, Ilitch is going to be all in.
I think losing Dombrowski is going to hurt them a lot. I think
I agree.
He's a pretty shrewd and very good GM. He's done them a lot of good over the years.
He could see the writing on the wall, Tony, with that wing.
The last 2 years for him have been a complete and utter disaster. But look at the Story of trade, some of his other moves. He built that team very well, but once they got to the top, he seemed to make, over the last 2 years, just about every, outside, after J.D. Martinez, I'll give him that, that's a hell of a grab. But since then, every move he's made is kind of...
He was running out of prospects, Jeff.
He
was trying to win, and he's like, look, I'm on the last leg of my prospects that can get it done here. I'm running out of guys here. They basically gutted that farm system to the point.
How about like Victor Martinez? I mean, this is a guy who had a hell of a year last year, a career year. Yes. He gets his big contract, and he's just been, he's been bad this year. He looks like he may have hit a wall. He's 36.
He's 36. He's going to be 37 before next year. That's what you get for giving a 4-year contract to a guy. Approaching 40.
Me and Jake Duggan were talking about that. I mentioned Victor earlier. He was like, you're rolling the dice with Victor at this age now. But, it might be worth the risk instead of giving up. You wouldn't have to give up much. You wouldn't have to give up a whole lot, probably.
At this point, I bet you could. That's one of those situations where there's an outside chance you could do a Martinez for Swisher if the Indians threw in a lesser prospect to balance. Because Martinez was so good a year ago and so awful this year, but it gets Detroit out of 2 years of a deal. So, I'm not saying even necessarily a top. That might be like Swisher and an Armstrong because they need pen depth type deal. But, it's conceivable, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and then you could slide him into the DH. You could put, if you want to, what else they do, you could put possibly Lonnie Chisenhall in right, and I say put Nathan in center. Or whoever you want to put in center.
I'm not sold on Naquin. He's going to have a lot of time before you're going to make him pencil him in as your starter in the outfield. He has the potential to be their starter, but if they're looking to win next year, they got to look at guys beyond Tyler Holt and Tyler Naquin. And there's only so many rookies you can put out there at one time, so many improving commodities. It's one thing if this team's rebuilding, but I would hope that we all agree that this team should just be retooling. This team should be looking to win. With that pitching staff they have, those starters, they're in it to win it any year. I don't care what they have in the bullpen, what they have on the field. With those guys, they have a chance to win every night. And I really hope that they really do what they is necessary this off season to take that extra step, go the extra mile to kind of get those pieces they're missing. I mean, no more of this pity patty stuff where they're trying to, you know, kind of just piecemeal so many positions.
Right.
I think they're going to have to go out and find a legitimate one or two starters at a position and maybe potentially take a hard swallow and eat some money. Like say, hey, we're dumping Bourne and we're going to go out and get the best center fielder we can get. We can't stick with Bourne another year. You know, Swisher, bro, Ohio dude, we love you, but I think it's time we got to move out. We're going to release you. We're going to eat the money and we're going to use that roster spot another guy that can help us. I mean, they may have to
and
make some
money. Yeah.
I don't know how they can have two spots in their lineup where they just kind of got to get down and pray that those guys are going to be anywhere remotely close to what they were in the past. Those guys, for all intents and purposes, are done. Could they get lucky? But yeah, I mean, it could happen. Maybe those guys have a bounce back here. But at this point, that's part of their biggest problem right now is those two guys. Not only does eating payroll, but being absolute albatrosses in the lineup. They're very unproductive players. And then when you add them into the mix of inconsistent guys like Kipnis and Jan Gomes, and, as we were talking about earlier, the Indians have no reliable players. The only reliable player that, and it's crazy, is Santana. You know what you're going to get out of that guy every year. When the season ends, you're going to get 100 walks. You're going to get, 20 homers. You know what you're going to get, but you never know what you're going to get out of Kipnis and those other guys. Even Brantley, you know he's going to hit around 300, but, the production numbers and the power numbers have been so fluctuating, have fluctuated so much the last 3 years. So that's part of the problem with this lineup.
I might disagree with you about Santana. The Santana, you know what you're going to get. Well, this year he's been terrible.
He's still well over 100 in WRC+. I mean, we get stuck on the negatives with him, but it's not a terrible year. It's not great for him, but he's still an above a 1 WAR. He's got a 739 OPS. His OPS plus is 104. He's been a slightly above average player.
He's just not what we I say he's a good player, but he's not a player that A, we thought we were getting whatever that was, and B,
I agree.
He's just not a cleanup hitter. The Indians made the mistake.
I've said that for a long time. I mean, if you put him in the six hole, you'd be happy with what he gives you out of that 6-7 spot.
Exactly. He's not a cleanup. That's why, when people guide on Twitter tell me, well, he has this as a cleanup hitter. Look. You could tell me until you're blue in the face what his advanced stats are in the cleanup hole. He's not a cleanup hitter, period.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have a mentality. He's just not a cleanup hitter. You have to watch the games. Like, Michael Hattery want to tell me that Corey Kluber is as good as he was last year. I mean, you got to watch the games, folks. Don't tell me what the stats say. Tell me, just watch the game. There's no way Corey Kluber is as good as he was last year. No way. You know what? And, Tony, I'll say this, too. I know it's slightly light off the subject. If he's not careful, he's not going to be the ace going into next year either.
Kluber's still ninth in xFIP and still a top 20 in WAR. So, I mean, it may not be as good as next year, but he'd still – I mean, Carrasco is outpacing him in xFIP.
I mean, remember, he hasn't – third. You got to remember, I mean, Kluber hasn't finished the season yet. We still have 8 weeks.
They've both been excellent. They've both been number one types is all I'm saying.
If you were to put Kluber's numbers up to this point this year, to his numbers to this point last year, I bet you they're pretty darn well close. Remember, he finished very strong. He had a very strong last 7-8 weeks that kind of bumped his numbers up. So, I mean, he potentially could finish with as good or pretty equal. I don't think it's that out of line.
No.
I think he's been better
ERA
than people think. ERA is not really the most. Yeah, that's something you got to not look at. You can't really control your ERA.
You can control. When I see him pitch, and I see him giving up three in the Tampa Bay game, giving a 3-2 out base hits to knock in about two or three runs to tie the game. I said, there's no way in his Cy Young. I can't remember in his Cy Young year him doing that. And he's done it several times this year. He's just not the same. He's just not pitching
so
as well.
Clearly one of the, I mean, yes, last year, you know, he was worth 7.4 wins, which was crazy. This year he's only got 2.6, which is, you know, significantly less. He's on pace for probably about a 5-win season. That's still all-star level. He's still
sure.
at the top. You know, last year he was clearly a top-5 pitcher in all the league. This year he's maybe somewhere in, like, the 8 to 12 range. But he's
right.
It's still a nice situation to have.
Sure.
So I mean, he's – go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, I mean, if you just look at his numbers across the board, I mean, really the only thing that's been different between this year and last year, he's only given up. I mean, like, his whip is only – it was a 1.10 last year. It's a 1.12 this year. I mean, his strikeout rate is almost equal. His walk rate is – I mean, it's the numbers are almost equal. It's just the difference is he's got more losses this year because he gets no run support. And he's just been a little bit unlucky in some certain situations. He definitely was better last year. If you include all of last year compared to this up to this point this year, but I think it'll be interesting to see how he finishes out the year. And as Jeff said, he's still a top 10, 12 starter in baseball. And the Indians have that position they're in with him and Carrasco right now, where they've got 1A and 1B, and that's a great position to be in. And Salazar and Bauer and all these other guys behind them for that fifth spot. I mean, like I said, they have an opportunity here. I mean, they're going to have to make some hard decisions this offseason and really find a way to retool this lineup in whatever means necessary.
I agree. One last thing. But let me just say this. Last year, with a 3-0 lead, I could go to bed and see that the Indians had won 5-1 or something like that. I woke up, they lost 5-4. I said, you know what? He's not the same pitcher, in my opinion. But one last thing before I go. We know about the lineup. We know about the rotation. I'll say this. You need to find either a better closer or you need to find somebody who could come in and close a game when Cody Anderson has a dead arm or he can't do it for the entire year. He cannot. And I said this last year. The guy, you need a closer, or you need somebody like a Aroldis Chapman, which is way better than Cody Allen, in my opinion.
Allen's numbers outside of ERA are stronger this year. I mean, I know I'm in the minority, but I think you're fine with him as a closer relative. I mean, today was one of those days that blows up. His WAR is actually higher this year. If you look at WAR among relievers, it's Betances from the Yankees, Chapman, Robertson, Rosenthal, and then Allen. He has the fifth highest WAR of any reliever in baseball. I don't think there's a whole lot of, you know, if you were to take the 30 best bullpen arms in baseball, he'd be in the top 15. I really think he would be.
I don't have a problem with him as a closer. I do have a problem with him being the only closer. I do have a problem with that. I think he wears down. I think I don't think he has and let me say this, very few pitchers do. I mean, it's not uncommon to go to for a real good team to go to two or three closers in a whole year. I mean, San Francisco did it with Romo, and they had I forget who they had earlier.
Wilson.
In the year.
A lot of times, that's injury related, though it happens.
Sometimes it's ineffectiveness too. I mean, some guys remember they had Casilla as the closer. They had two or three guys as closers. So it's not uncommon.
Well, I mean, here's my thing with Cody Allen. I like Cody Allen. I don't like the walk rate for a guy closing. Who's a guy that's near a 3.5 walk rate for his career. And I just don't like that as a closer. I want a guy that throws strikes.
Chapman's even worse. He's at 5.
Yeah. I mean, I that just scares me. I mean, you're creating rallies by letting those guys get on base. Now, to Cody Allen's advantage, he doesn't give up a lot of hits. And he's pretty tough on batters in that regard. But yeah, I can live with that walk rate. It's just I think that more times, that's often his downfall when he's having trouble with his command or he's having trouble getting that curveball over. That's when his biggest problem is. I mean, this year he's actually having one of his best years. And it doesn't show it in his ERA, but if you look at his strikeout rates and his home run, he's got the least amount of home runs this year than he has in any year as far as home runs per nine innings and those kind of things. So like all those rates and all that stuff's all good. Just the unfortunate thing is he's had a couple big blow-ups, today being one of them. He had that one way earlier in the year.
He's got off to a poor start. He got off to a poor start last year. I mean, earlier this year.
Here's a fun one. If you look at relievers, strikeout rate, he's third, the fifth highest strikeout rate among relievers. Old favorite, Zach Putnam.
Just a
throw name from the past.
Oh, yeah. But, like I said, I don't have a problem with him as closer. But find somebody, whether it's in the farm system, Jeff Johnson, Armstrong, or Soto, or somebody who can say, you know what, I need to give Cody a day off because he might wear down during the course of the year. Let's go with Soto or whoever as the closer of the day, just to save on Cody Allen. And a couple of prospects, Tony. What's going on with Jeff Johnson? I like to see him at AAA sometime.
I mean, they tend to move bullpen arms like almost level by level, don't they?
Tony gone.
Did we lose Tony?
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess we lost him again. Yeah,
I'm going to bed.
Fair enough, man. Yeah, we have very little time left in the show. We lost Tony again, so thanks for calling in, Hiram.
Talk to you later.
Yes, it's looking like we lost Tony again. So there's only 5 minutes left in the show. So I think we will call that an evening. And thanks for listening and working through my rambling and our technical difficulties. We will be in the normal slot for next week, and the week after we might have smaller time slots because I am a teacher and will be can't stay up quite as late in the evening. So once again, thanks for listening, and go Tribe.